Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
You know, it's interesting filling in for Dave. That's actually how I first got into here at 98.7 ESPN New York 3 years ago on the Knicks broadcasts when Dave was the pregame show host primarily. He was the first guy I met here at ESPN Radio, and he's the guy who showed me the ropes and kind of ran me through things as I was his backup for a couple of years on the Knicks broadcast. So it's nice to be, after 3 years, filling in for Dave once again on this Saturday morning. It's a Saturday morning, less than 48 hours removed from the NBA draft. And, of course, basketball fans, and particularly Knicks fans, are still digesting what we saw in the NBA draft. Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson are here. And I think the biggest takeaway from that NBA draft and what you saw out of the law firm of Scott Perry and Steve Mills is, well, they're sticking with the plan. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that's the most positive thing to come out of the draft. Is it the right plan? I have no idea. I don't think anybody knows. Look, Perry and Mills have been running this organization together for less than a year. Perry was hired last July, so it hasn't even been a full calendar year. But the thing that you like is they did not let another 50-loss season divert them from the plan that they have in place. And what is that plan? Well, it may be boring, but of course it's a plan built on player development through the draft, through taking some shots and taking some flyers on some young players. And look, they have two very young and two very intriguing players that they have now added to this roster in Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson. And of course, the big headline coming out of Thursday night's draft at Barclays Center was the reaction that Kevin Knox received when Adam Silver called his name with the number 9 pick. It's a reaction that we in New York have heard many times before. Of course, most recently with Kristaps Porzingis in 2015, but it goes across all sports. Just ask any Jet fan who's attended an NFL draft over the last 30 years if he's seen or heard or been a part of that reaction before. Look, that comes with the territory, and that means nothing. And Kevin Knox, speaking at his introductory press conference yesterday, realizes that that means nothing. But let's take a closer look at what this draft pick means for the Knicks. When you look at what they could have done at number 9, they could have gone three ways. They could have gone with Mikal Bridges of Villanova. They could have gone with Michael Porter Jr., or they could have gone with Kevin Knox. Now, Bridges was probably the safest pick out of all of them. The most accomplished college player, a two-time national champion, a 3-and-D guy, which is very valuable in this league, but he was also the oldest, which kind of works against you in today's NBA. But Bridges would have been the safest pick. The Knicks could have picked him, and I don't think there would have been anything wrong with that. Michael Porter Jr., I don't think there's any question, has the highest upside if everything works out. But he was the biggest reach of the three of them because of his back issues. Of course, a year ago, Michael Porter Jr. was thought to be the presumptive number one pick in this draft. But then he has the back problem that limits him to 3 college games at the University of Missouri. And look, the Knicks, they just don't need to go down that road right now. The Knicks are not in a position where they need to be reaching. Because what is Michael, let's just say Michael Porter Jr. is healthy for the next couple of years. What is that going to do for the Knicks long term? It's not worth, the reward is not worth the risk. He would take them from a 27-win team to a 31-win team. That doesn't mean anything right now. You need to develop an infrastructure on this team and look ahead to the summer of 2019, because that's the key summer for this team. And then, of course, the third option, and ultimately the one that the Knicks went with, is Kevin Knox. And I look at Knox as kind of being in the middle of Bridges and Porter. He's definitely safer than Porter, not as safe as Mikal Bridges, but I think he has a higher upside than Mikal Bridges, and I think most people would agree. He's 18 years old. He has a lot of versatility. He's just growing into his body. He's just growing into his game. This is a guy who has a lot of potential. He's got big-time experience as well, albeit only 1 year. But 1 year at the University of Kentucky is probably as close as you can get to playing for an NBA franchise, playing for an NBA head coach in John Calipari. So he's not going to be frightened off by the bright lights when he comes to New York. He's a soft-spoken kid. You saw that Thursday night if you were watching the broadcast on ESPN. You saw that yesterday as I was out there at the Knicks Training Center up in Greenberg when he was addressing the local media for the first time. Very soft-spoken kid, very confident kid, and he said all the right things. He kind of laughed off the boos. He even joked about having a conversation with Kristaps Porzingis, saying to Porzingis, "Hey, I got as many boos as you did 3 years ago." Also a good sign that Porzingis took some time out of his schedule in Spain rehabbing his knee to give the youngster a call. That is a good sign because these last couple of off seasons have been interesting from the Porzingis perspective, and not having him in New York or even in the United States, I think there's a little bit of doubt among the Knicks and Knicks fans as far as where Porzingis' head is long-term, considering this franchise, and I think it's a good sign that he called the youngster the night of the NBA draft. So what are the goals for the Knicks this year? It's pretty simple. Look, we have, as I mentioned, a general manager and a new team president still less than a year into their current roles. And then you have a head coach who hasn't coached a game yet for this team. So he's going to have time. David Fizdale is going to have time. The first goal this year, develop, develop, develop. And they're going to have more time and they're going to put more emphasis on developing their young players than they did last year. There's a couple of reasons for that. One, obviously, Kristaps Porzingis is not going to be healthy to start the season. So the chances of the Knicks starting off fast like they did last year when they were 17-14 in late December after a national TV win over the Boston Celtics, that is very unlikely because you're not going to have Kristaps Porzingis to start the season. I mean, you remember the first 10 games of Porzingis' season last year. They were historic. He averaged 30 points a game through 10 games. That's an eighth of the season. That production is not going to be there. We don't know when it's coming back, but we know it's not going to be there for the start of the season. So it's going to give the Knicks plenty of time to develop their young players. And David Fizdale is going to be committed to developing their young players. Why? Because he was hired by Mills and Perry. Jeff Hornacek, last year's head coach, was not. Hornacek was coming off a disappointing sub-500 year, and all of a sudden last year he found himself working for two guys who did not hire him. And I know Mills was part of the front office that hired Hornacek, but that was Phil Jackson's hire. Mills and Perry are aligned in this situation. So Hornacek needed to win as many games as possible last year. So what did that mean? That meant more Enes Kanter, more Michael Beasley, more Courtney Lee in the beginning of the season, and less Frank Ntilikina, less Damian Dotson, less of these young guys who you wanted to see develop last year. Frank Ntilikina plays this year. Kevin Knox plays this year. Emmanuel Mudiay plays this year until it's determined that he possibly can't play. Trey Burke is out there. Tim Hardaway Jr. is a building block and part of this franchise's future. Damian Dotson plays this year. Look, all of these guys are not going to be here long term, but the Knicks have a good opportunity to see what each and every one of these guys can do. There are no expectations for this season. Kristaps Porzingis comes back when he's healthy, not a moment sooner. You don't rush him back for the Christmas Day game. You don't rush him back for the London game against the 76ers on January 17th. I know he's a big star in Europe, and that game will be in Europe, and you would love to see him on the floor in that game. You do not rush Kristaps Porzingis back a moment before he is healthy. For two reasons. One, why are you messing with your franchise player? And number two, and this leads me into my second goal for the Knicks this season, this time around, they have to do tanking right. Rewind to last offseason. The Knicks were thought to be among the two or three worst teams in the NBA, roster-wise. And the thought was they might actually lose enough games last year to get in the top three in the NBA draft lottery. But their hot start that I alluded to a moment ago, 17-14 in late December, thoughts of a playoff spot in late December, that did away with any chance of the Knicks being at or near the top of the lottery. Well, this year, with Porzingis out indefinitely, with a commitment to play the young players and let them gain their experience and let them take their lumps, that will inherently lead to more losses. And yeah, if you're a Knicks fan, it's one of the last things you want to hear right now is more losses. But as I was speaking with Gordon Damer at the end of his show, what other option is there right now? The last thing you want to do is go 32-50 again and get the number 9 pick in the draft again. They've done that the last 2 years. They came away with what you hope are two nice pieces in Frank Ntilikina and Kevin Knox. But remember the last time the Knicks picked in the top four? 2015? How did they do that year? They came away with an NBA All-Star, a guy who made the NBA All-Star team within his first 3 seasons in the league in Kristaps Porzingis. Now, you don't need a star in every draft, but you do need some stars. The Knicks have a star on their team right now. They got a star in 2015. But around your star, you need some pieces. Tim Hardaway Jr. is a piece. A lot of people scoffed at his contract last offseason, 4 years, $71 million. It was a high price to pay for a guy who the Knicks had traded away and discarded 2 years prior. Well, Tim Hardaway Jr. turned out to be a lot better than I think a lot of people thought last year. Is he a star? No. But he is a very solid piece, and he's a part of the future. He's a young player. He plays on both ends of the floor. And if you look at the Knicks season last year, things started to go downhill when Hardaway hurt his foot in late November. That was the first sign that the Knicks were going downhill, and of course things came to an end in early February when Porzingis went out for the year. Now, you don't need a star in every draft, but you do need pieces. So instead of the number 9 pick next year, you'd like to be in that top 3 or 4. Go get your second star, your young star, your Luka Doncic, your Mo Bamba, your DeAndre Ayton. Whoever that guy is next year, you got to get that guy. You bring him in with your established star now in Kristaps Porzingis and your pieces like Tim Hardaway Jr. You hope Kevin Knox is an important piece. You hope Frank Ntilikina is an important piece. And there's other guys on this roster as well. And then the third goal for the season is you've got to put yourself in position to be attractive to free agents in the summer of 2019 when you have cap space and when there are attractive free agents out there. Are the Knicks close to that? No, but they have a whole year between now and next summer to get there. And from what I saw this week in the NBA draft, they are trending in the right direction.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Kevin Knox, a guest on the Michael Kay Show yesterday on 98.7 ESPN New York. Of course, the question everyone wanted to know, what did he think of the reaction? What I would call a typical New York reaction when the NBA commissioner announced his name and the New York fans were less than happy.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that was going to happen. There was going to be Knicks fans in there that wanted somebody else other than me. So, I mean, I knew I was going to get some boos, going to get some other names called, but I mean, I just handled it well. I knew it was going to come, so I kind of prepared myself for that situation.
And, of course, the other name that he's alluding to is Michael Porter Jr., and the fans were actually chanting his name as the Knicks were on the clock. But as I mentioned earlier, I just don't think the Knicks as a franchise are in any position right now to take a risk on a player like Michael Porter Jr. and his injury history. Now, Knox is interesting because you started to hear his name more and more in the week leading up to the draft, and you started to hear about this one particular workout in which he went 3-on-3 and really showed his competitive side with the Knicks and their front office in the week leading up to the draft. So when did Kevin Knox knew that he would be a New York Knick?
Around after the 8th pick. I knew New York was really high on me, and I think they had a really good shot at getting me, so my agent got the text message, and my stomach started just tightening up.
And he is a member of the New York Knicks. So that was Kevin Knox, a guest on the Michael Kay Show yesterday. Now, yesterday up in the Knicks training facility in Greenberg, New York, up in Westchester County, David Fizdale, the new head coach, was on hand. And, of course, Knicks fans are still getting used to their new head coach and seeing what he's all about. Now, a couple of things you like to hear coming out of Fizdale's mouth, and this is what I talked about earlier, the commitment to playing these young players. And Fizdale was asked if he has any problem playing Kevin Knox right away.
I got no problem playing them. Starting them, playing them, whatever ends up coming out of it. I wouldn't have had no problem doing that with Frank. These guys got to swim now. And some of that means there's going to be some bumps. But you learn faster by going through it. And so I feel very confident throwing these young guys out there and letting them go through the highs and lows of the league.
All right, there's one thing to play a guy right off the bat. There's another to start him right off the bat. We saw Derek Fisher do that in 2015 for Kristaps Porzingis. I think a lot of people were surprised because of how raw Porzingis was. In hindsight, I think that ended up being an excellent decision by Derek Fisher and the Knicks. So Fizdale was asked, can he see Kevin Knox in the starting lineup? I mean, the guy's only 18 years old.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at our roster right now. Absolutely. Who's our starting three? Any of you guys know? You want to help me?
Courtney or Tim.
And they're both 6'5", and he's got to guard LeBron and Durant, and those are the threes in our league. So I feel like it's a very good opportunity there for him to have a chance to start.
Tim Hardaway Jr. had to start a lot at the three position last year, guarding forwards, guarding guys taller than him, like LeBron James and even Kevin Durant on occasion. So there's David Fizdale talking about his 6'9" rookie Kevin Knox. And again, he's 18. He's not going to turn 19 until August, I believe August 11th. Maybe he hasn't even completely grown into his body. Maybe there's still an inch to get out of his 6'9" frame. There's obviously a lot more development to come for Kevin Knox. 1-800-919-3776 is the number. Coming up at the top of the hour, Alan Hahn will join us. He'll call in to talk a little bit about the Knicks draft and what we can look forward to in their offseason. But right now, let's go to the phones, and first we'll check in with James in Spring Valley. James, what's going on this morning?
Hey, Pat. It's great to hear you on the radio. I also enjoy seeing One News 12, man.
Thank you, James. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. As I said on the Gordon Damer show, I feel like I'm in a minority. I actually like this pick because the Knicks can't afford to get a guy like Porter Jr. who has back issues. And if Porter Jr. was good, he fell all the way down to 14. Now, I'm not saying Porter Jr. is going to be a bum. He might turn out to be really good, but 13 other teams passed on him too. It's not just the Knicks. So my question is, after hearing Fizdale, after hearing Knox, and they also drafted other kid Robinson, is how much faith should Knicks fans like myself put in that they talk the talk, but how much faith we can they can actually go out there, develop their players, you know, trust this new regime, developing their players, and see what happens? Because I don't want to have 32, 33, 34 wins. I know we're going to be a bad team, but I don't want to be a team that's on the treadmill. I want a team that's going up. So how much faith should I put in there that the Knicks are going to do a good job of developing their players? Thanks for taking my call, Pat. Have a good day.
James, thanks for calling in. I don't know how much faith you should put into Mills and Perry, and now let's get down to Fizdale and his ability to develop players. But, and this is what I've been saying for a year, you have no other choice. There's no other option. As a Knicks fan right now, this is what you have. This is the management team, Mills and Perry. This is the head coach, Fizdale. They're all very new in their jobs, and this is what it is right now. They say the right things. They have a plan, first of all, so you like that. Whether or not it's the right plan, I don't think anybody knows yet, but they have a plan. And number two, they haven't gone away from their plan. I mean, let's go back to the last regime. I know you're like, do we have to go back to the Phil Jackson regime? But Phil Jackson seemed to change his plan every year. He came in and he took over a franchise that missed the playoffs under Mike Woodson by one game. They had a furious rally at the end of the season. He gets rid of the coach and he scraps the entire roster. And then they win 17 games his first year. That's fine. He had carte blanche to do that and he was building in the right direction. That offseason, he gets Kristaps Porzingis. He brings in a couple of intriguing free agents. He brings in a Robin Lopez who did some nice things for the Knicks. He brings in Aaron Aflalo to put some professionals around Porzingis. And of course, you still had Carmelo Anthony at that time, who I think Carmelo Anthony in Porzingis' rookie season had one of his best all-around seasons as a Knick. There was huge improvement. They went from 17 wins to, I believe, 31 or 32 wins in that first season. And then he scrapped that whole plan. That didn't seem to be enough. He scrapped that whole plan and made the Derrick Rose trade. And that was his version of wanting to go for it. And they were on the treadmill, as you just said. These guys, Mills and Perry, were not discouraged by last year's results. They weren't. This is a process, and that was year one of that process. All right, back to the phones we go, and let's chat with Kempton, who's calling in from the car. What's up, Kempton?
Hey, what's going on, Pat? How you feeling, man?
Good. How you doing?
I'm awesome. I feel great. Listen, I just wanted to say this. You know, this season coming up, we should not expect the Knicks to lose. You know, we shouldn't expect them to just come out and, you know, be bust and come out and be ready to get into the top three picks in the draft. We should not expect that. We have a young team. Fizdale is going to allow them to play, you know, allow them to get better, because the only way to really develop players is you got to let them play, man. Let them get out there, get in the fire, and see what they got. Mills and Perry, I have to give them a lot of credit, man. I have to give them a lot of credit. And Dolan, too, by the way, because we haven't heard his name. We haven't seen his face. Oh, man, I'm so happy. He's letting these two men run the team the way that they're supposed to, which is building through the draft and you know, just getting better that way. And, again, free agents. How are we going to get free agents if we come into the season just expecting to lose? I mean, that makes no sense. Teams want to see what these young kids got. Players want to see what these young kids got and see if they can come and kind of fit inside of this mold. So I'm very excited. So don't expect us to lose, Pat. Don't expect us to lose, man. We might surprise everybody.
Well, Kempton, they've done that the last couple of years, especially early in the season. I love the optimism. Without Porzingis and really an established NBA star on the team, I don't see how it's possible for the Knicks to not at least go backwards this year in win total. But here's the thing. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. Look at a team like the Phoenix Suns. Last year, they went 21-61. They had some really good young players. They had Devin Booker, who's one of the best young players in the league. They had Josh Jackson, the rookie out of Kansas, who got better and better as the season went. Now look at the Phoenix Suns. And Kempton, you're talking about free agents not wanting to come to a place where they expect to lose. Well, look at the Suns now. In addition to Booker and Jackson, you've just added DeAndre Ayton, and you added Mikal Bridges, the kid out of Villanova. That is a very strong core, a very strong nucleus. I would expect Phoenix to take a huge step forward this year. And when they do, if and when they do, how much more attractive will they become to potential free agents? First of all, is Phoenix the worst place in the world to live and work? Absolutely not. It's a young, exciting, energetic team. Phoenix right now, Knicks fans, Phoenix right now is where you want your team to be next year. They have the star, Booker. You have the star, Porzingis. They have other pieces like Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges. You have other pieces like Tim Hardaway Jr. and hopefully Kevin Knox. And then they got the number one pick in the draft, and they added what they hope will be a huge piece in DeAndre Ayton. And if the Knicks are at the top of that lottery and at the top of that draft next year, they can add that extra piece as well. And then you look at the Knicks and you have a top four pick and you have Porzingis and Kevin Knox develops and Neal Akina takes a step forward and you have Tim Hardaway Jr. and people love playing for Fizdale, which you hear that people do. And like I said, Phoenix isn't the worst place in the world to live and work. You know what else isn't the worst place in the world to live and work? New York City. That's the goal for the Knicks. Put yourself in position where you are as attractive as possible to free agents next offseason. Obviously, Kyrie Irving's the first name on that list. Kawhi Leonard on that list. I'm not saying you put all your eggs in those baskets, but the Knicks need to put themselves in position where they are as attractive as possible next summer in 2019.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Joining us now on the phone to chat a little bit more about that, Alan Hahn, host of the Alan Hahn Show, of course, weekdays right here from 7 to 10 p.m., and also one of the studio analysts for the Knicks broadcasts on MSG. Alan, how are you today?
What's going on?
It's great to talk to you, and everybody's talking about the Knicks right now, which is also exciting. It seems like it never stops for a team that has lost 50 games in a row for the last few seasons. But let's start with the draft and what you saw the other night, Alan. First off, Kevin Knox, were you surprised by the pick in any way? Did you think they might go in another direction? And what is your reaction to what you've seen and heard from Knox and everyone since the pick?
Well, surprised, no. I've been hearing about Knox as a potential target for the last, I guess, I guess more late last week, it started to become that name. Hey, keep an eye on this kid. They really like him. I kept feeling like the safe pick would have been Bridges, Mikal Bridges from Villanova, and because he fit what they needed, and you'd think because of his maturity, the couple of years that he spent in college, older player, that he'd be able to just step in and play right away. But they really liked the potential that Knox showed, and his workout, he really blew them away. He's making a lot of shots, but what they like the most is that a lot of in the pre-draft process, what they do is they offer you some players who know they're going to be top 10 will only work out by themselves. They'll just come in the gym, they'll do some drills, they'll show off their skill set, and then they'll call it a day. And others, the team will say, the teams like to see you in a competitive environment, so they try to create three-on-threes by bringing in a bunch of first-round picks and play them together. And so when they ask Knox, would you come in and do three-on-three for us with some other top 15 lottery-type picks, he agreed, and they liked that. And then not only did he agree, but when he showed up, he battled, and the compete level was high. They were telling me that that workout was really intense and very actually entertaining because of how hard the players were playing. And so they saw something in Knox that they liked, which is a guy that had a high compete level and also showed the potential of skill, not just with the basketball, like shooting it or posting up for a guy 6'9", but he could handle the basketball under pressure, could dribble it. For a big guy, that's important in today's game. So that really kind of got their attention. And the fact that, I mean, he's not going to be 19 years old till August. So he's very, very young, and they feel like they can spend some time developing him, and they think he's going to be, Jay Billis called him the steal of the draft. So it shows you that this is a guy that probably has high potential, but it's going to take time to develop him from the beginning.
How seriously, if at all, do you think they entertain the idea of Michael Porter Jr., and do you think that's a road they should have gone down?
No, I don't. And I, if anybody listened to my show that night on the draft, I just went off on people who suddenly become draft experts and start condemning the Knicks about things when I'm like, this kid played 53 minutes of college basketball, and I challenge anyone to say they saw any of those minutes. It's all he played. He did not play. And so, you know the history of the franchise. I mean, how many times have they made mistakes taking gambles like this and hoping that the injuries will never happen again? I mean, you know, one major gamble, Amari Stoudemire. Another one, Antonio McDice. You can go back in history and see mistakes made because, well, let's take a chance on the big name, and it was a huge mistake. This is one of those where they just couldn't afford it. Their star player right now has an ACL injury. I mean, do you really want to now have to wait for two lottery picks? And then you have Neal Aquino, who's a developing player. You got to get these things right. So I think they made the smart play there. Did they consider him? Absolutely. As he dropped, you knew he was on their board. But the risk was there, and several teams, he didn't go till 14, so several teams passed on him with the same concerns. Now, they've spent a lot of time on Porter Jr. They went to a couple of his workouts. They tried to get his medicals. They wanted to get all the information on him as they could because they thought there was a chance he could fall to 9. And if he does, well, you better be prepared. You better make sure you're right, either taking him or not taking him. And all their intel said that it was just not the right pick for them at 9. And somebody made this point to me on Twitter, and I thought it was a very smart thing to say. Jerry West is one of the most astute draft if you have him, I don't know the word right now, but if you have him in your front office,
right,
you generally have great drafts.
Right.
And he is with the Clippers right now. He was with, every team he's been with, they find really good players in the draft. The Clippers had back-to-back picks. They passed on him twice. So if Jerry West passes on you twice, that's a problem.
That says something. That's a good point. That's a good tweet, too. Yeah. Alan Hahn joins us to talk about the Knicks and their draft and the offseason. So they go with Kevin Knox, a forward, and then the center, Mitchell Robinson. So let me ask you this, Alan. They didn't pick a point guard, and there were some. Gilgeous Alexander, maybe he might have been a reach, but maybe they could have taken him there. Obviously, the two big names weren't available. But the fact that the Knicks didn't pick a point guard in this draft, what in your mind does that say about how they feel about their point guard situation right now?
Well, I think it's less about what they have right now and more about the fact that what they've said going into the draft. Scott Perry said this: what you do is you draft a guard who if you draft him, if he's better than what you have. So that's not saying what they have they're satisfied with or what they have is great. It's what was on the board at the point guard position is nothing better than what they have. So why not fill an area of need, which is obviously on the wing, which is a huge area of need and an area that you're seeing around the NBA, which is so valuable. Wing players who are versatile enough to play outside and inside, that can guard multiple positions, that can shoot from the outside but can score from the inside. Those guys, every good team has guys like that. So they put more of a priority on it. I do think if Trae Young happened to be there, which obviously he was nowhere near nine, I think they might have. Colin Sexton was somebody they liked, but from what I understood, I think even still they would have gone with Knox over Sexton if he was still there on the board.
All right, so the draft is behind us. We have these two intriguing young players. I'm going to ask you your thoughts on Robinson in a minute. But bigger picture, off-season, Alan, what, in your mind, are the goals or the priorities of the Knicks between now and the start of the season?
The priority is to make sure that you don't lose as much. You maintain your cap space for 2019. I think that's a big priority. I don't see them. Actually, I think Perry did admit that yesterday openly, which I found interesting.
He came very close to saying they weren't going to be active, right?
Yeah. I mean, he almost blatantly said, don't expect us to do anything, you know, which is amazing to think that. So they're not going to be a team that's going to go chasing anybody this offseason, so which means they're not going to add a lot of significant cap space. Now, they could re-sign Kyle O'Quinn. That could happen. You know, they might have to replace Cantor in a way if they do. But aside from that, I don't expect that you're going to see them trying to get involved in anything significant this year, because 2019 is when it's going to matter most. They're going to have, right now, they could have the potential of having the ability to sign two players to a max contract. Remember, they also have to re-sign Porzingis to his contract out of his rookie deal. So there's a lot of money to be spent next year. So, no, I think this summer priority is that. The other priority is development. They've got a lot of young players. And you can't overlook, you know, so you have these two guys coming in, an 18-year-old, and then Mitchell Robinson, who's an extremely raw player. So you have these two. Neal Akina is still a developing player who, by the way, is still 19. Hard to believe, but he's still 19. He won't be 20 until July. You have Emmanuel Mudiay, who they traded for, who is still fairly young, but is another guy that desperately needs development, and they have to know about him because his contract will be up after this season. You're either going to give up on him and move on, or you're going to turn him into something and want to keep him. So their focus is so much on players like that, like on Dotson, you know, younger players that they have in their system, and trying to make something out of them so that by the time you get to next year at this time, you either have a good foundation of young players that a free agent's going to want to come play with, or you'll know, all right, we need to start moving off on some of these young guys and start filling the roster with more talent.
Mitchell Robinson seems really interesting to me. I mean, he's 7'1". They say he runs like a guard. That's not a bad thing. But he hasn't played. He hasn't played in 2 years. But I think second round is where you reach. Maybe not, you know, like we said, you don't reach for Michael Porter when you have the ninth pick and you have to get it right. Second round, I think, is the spot where you could take a chance, and it seems like they're taking a chance with this kid.
It's not a bad risk. And in fact, people I talk to that know the draft, you know, that are really that's their livelihood and scouting players, thought he might be a late first round. Some people thought he was going to go, you know, wasn't a bad reach for a team, you know, from 25 to 30. I heard the Celtics actually would be a good landing spot. You know, teams that don't have really obvious needs, but more or less just, you know, grab some talent and see if they can turn them into something. He's somebody that is, as I said, extremely raw, but you're right. I mean, that's not a bad reach at all for high second round when you can find a player who has physical potential and he just needs, there's a lot of things he needs. Number one, clearly school wasn't the best thing for him. Like you could just tell by his background, trying to get into college, trying to play college, leaving twice. You know, he comes from a humble background, so he's going to need a lot of guidance on and off the court. So this is somebody they're going to have to really invest a lot of time in, but there's potential there. So it could be a huge, you know, return if you put the right kind of investment in him as a player. He's got everything you need in today's NBA, like you just mentioned. He's got athletic ability for a seven-footer. This is a guy who the Knicks were like one of the lowest teams in the league last year at alley-oops. Like they just never, ever threw alley-oops. The last couple of years, that wasn't part of their game. And that's all over the NBA, those lob passes off pick and roll. Easy 2 points. The Knicks never used to do it. You add a player like this, and it's Lob City. I mean, that's all he does. So, you know, he's a good rim runner. You can teach him some things defensively, and you can hope that it turns into something. But he's another one that I wouldn't expect anything immediate from him. This is something where G League, a lot of development, and maybe a year or two, you look back and go, wow, what a steal this guy was. He turned into a terrific player. So, again, it's more investment, more time, more development. It's everything that they've been talking about they need to do. The easy part, I don't know if you've ever seen Hamilton, but I love quoting it. And Hamilton is, you know, dying is easy, living is harder. Well, I always say drafting is easy, developing's harder. Yep. That's the stage the Knicks are at right now.
It's a great theory to develop, but you have to be able to know how to do it. And that's where we are with this team. And along those lines, the names that you just rattled off of the guys who need to be developed, I would imagine for Knicks fans who want to get a feel for this team, that the ratings for the summer league on MSG will be pretty high this summer.
Actually, ESPN. ESPN's got the exclusive rights.
Oh, well, there you go.
Just to summer league. It's the first time we're not going to be there, which I'm bummed out about.
Absolutely.
Actually, just like you said, I'm actually fired up for it. I'm pretty excited about the idea of seeing so many of these young players who are actually, like, in the past, summer league teams, majority of the players, you're not even going to see them on the Knicks roster. This year, most of these guys will probably be on the Knicks roster.
There could be guys on the NBA roster who don't crack the starting five on the summer league team.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
It is.
It's pretty funny, but it's true. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to watch this summer for sure. And then obviously training camp and what they do. But they're spending a lot of time with these young guys. This is the investment you got to put in now. That's today's NBA. You can't just, you know, throw money at star players and put a team together. You've got to get young players and develop them. This is how the Warriors were built. Same way, through the draft. KD came later, you know, but it took drafting at the beginning to get the foundation in place. And that's what they're hoping to do right now with the Knicks.
No question about it. Alan, thanks a lot for a couple minutes on this Saturday morning.
You got it.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It officially puts an end to the Carmelo Anthony era with the Knicks. Of course, that is the other asset that the Knicks acquired when they traded Carmelo to Oklahoma City last September. It was, of course, Doug McDermott and Enes Kanter and the second-round pick that originally belonged to the Chicago Bulls and then was passed on to the Knicks. So that's what the Knicks used to pick up Mitchell Robinson. So for Carmelo Anthony, what's the haul for Carmelo? Well, first of all, they're not paying him this year because Carmelo Anthony, as everybody expected, opted into the last year of his contract, the contract that he originally signed with Phil Jackson 5 years ago for, I believe, $1 million under the maximum that he was allowed to be paid. So he officially opts into the last year of his contract worth $28 million. I mean, there's no way that anybody else was going to pay a guy who averaged 16 points a game and shot less than 40% last year, $28 million this season.
Especially at this advanced age, reconstructive knee surgery.
And the league is changing. Versatility and athleticism. Those are the two buzzwords now in the NBA, neither of which describe Carmelo Anthony at this point of his career. So the Knicks get that off their books. They get Enes Kanter. And look, we're talking about next year Enes Kanter will probably be on this team, but you're also talking about developing young players and, I'm not going to say tanking, but developing them to the point where they're on the floor enough for you to lose a lot of games. But you do need somebody out on the floor to produce. And if you look at last year's Knicks team, from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, the guy who was productive the most nights for that team was Enes Kanter. He was a double-double machine. He plays hard every single night. He plays injured. He sticks up for his teammates. So what I'm saying is Enes Kanter, for $19 million that he's probably going to opt in for in the last year of his contract, not the worst guy to have around this year, just to kind of serve as an example for all of these young players you have on your roster. Like a Mitchell Robinson, a guy who hasn't played a competitive basketball game in 2 years. Well, Enes Kanter is as competitive as he gets. So the Knicks get Enes Kanter, and then they took a flyer on what turned out to be three guys. One, Mitchell Robinson with this draft pick. Number two, they took a flyer on Doug McDermott. It didn't work out for him as they had hoped in Chicago. It didn't work out as they had hoped in Oklahoma City, but he's one of the most productive college basketball players of all time. The Knicks brought him in last year. He was still young, and midway through the season, they realized that they weren't getting out of him what they hoped. So they flipped McDermott for Emmanuel Mudiay, the third player they took a flyer on. So for Carmelo Anthony, if you can get out from under that $28 million this season, You can get a productive guy like Enes Kanter, and then you could take a flyer on three guys in Doug McDermott, and that didn't work out. Emmanuel Mudiay, the jury's still out, and now Mitchell Robinson. That's not that bad of a return for Carmelo Anthony, and this puts an end to the Carmelo Anthony era in New York. 1-800-919-3776 is the number. You keep trying with these guys that you're taking flyers on. Who knows where you're going to find the next Robert Covington in Philadelphia. Robert Covington during the process, when Joel Embiid wasn't playing, when Ben Simmons wasn't playing, when Philadelphia was losing 65, 70 games a year, Robert Covington, who was undrafted out of Tennessee State, I think, he got a lot of playing time, and he earned a lot of experience in the NBA during the process. And you know what happened? When Simmons got healthy and Embiid got healthy and J.J. Redick got signed and Dario Saric developed, Robert Covington found himself as a very important part of a team that went to the playoffs and went to the second round of the playoffs last year. Where can the Knicks find that kind of guy? Well, you got to keep trying. James in Ridgewood calls in. What's up, James?
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I loved everything that you're doing, and I can see why Fizdale was our guy. The whole team is young now. $50 million in cap spaces to Ernest Kanter, Courtney Lee, and Joakim Noah. All players that you don't want no part of. Just ride their contracts out. No more trades, no more signing. Just let Fizdale do his thing of developing the young talent. And then we'll be there. And people will love to come us because they say, look, they show commitment to the young talent that they have, you know, and they develop their young players and they didn't make any more bad, you know, signings, you know. So when the time is right, we can get the guy that we need once all these contracts and all the young talent will be developed, you know. So I agree
with you, James. And the time for that, it's a good point. The time for that is next summer. The time for that is not this summer. I agree with you. Don't make a bad contract or a bad situation worse by trying to unload it. Ride it out. An important phrase. Today's Around the Diamond is brought to you by Volvo of Glen Cove. Mets lost to the Dodgers 5-2 last night. Zach Wheeler actually pitched pretty well. One big mistake, the grand slam to Cody Bellinger did him in. And hey, good news, Mets and Mets fans. Clayton Kershaw hasn't pitched since May 31st. Well, guess what? He is off the disabled list tonight on the mound at Citi Field for his first game in nearly a month. A marquee pitching matchup tonight at 7:15 as Jacob deGrom opposes Clayton Kershaw. Yanks, well, they can't win them all. They lose 2-1 last night at Tampa Bay. Sonny Gray on the mound for the Yankees. He's been the definition of up and down this season against Wilmer Font this afternoon at 4:10. And that's today's Around the Diamond brought to you by Volvo of Glen Cove, the number one dealer in the country. Visit their winning team at Volvo Cars Glen Cove and drive off with confidence in your new Volvo today.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Kevin Knox belongs to the New York Knicks, the ninth pick in the draft out of the University of Kentucky. A couple interesting things I heard yesterday. I was at his press conference up in Greenburg when they introduced him alongside Mitchell Robinson. Steve Mills and Scott Perry were up on the dais, so to speak, alongside the two Knick rookies. David Fizdale was there, and he addressed the media afterwards. And one of the points that Fizdale made was you have to like the fact that this kid wanted to go and play for Kentucky, and you had to like the fact that this kid wanted to be a New York Knick. Now, a lot of what you heard even before the draft is that Kevin Knox wanted to be a New York Knick. And when Alan Hahn joined me an hour ago, he did make the good point that most of the guys projected in the top 10 only give individual workouts. And Kevin Knox was a top 10 pick. This wasn't a reach by the Knicks. Maybe some teams had him 7. Maybe some teams had him 10. But this isn't a guy who was 15 on everybody else's draft board that the Knicks jumped up to pick at number 9. He was right in the range where the Knicks were picking. He was a projected top 10 pick. And he elected to take part in a 3-on-3 workout when the Knicks asked him to do so. He not only played, so that showed Mills and Perry and Fizdale one thing, but then according to reports, he dominated in that 3-on-3 workout against other guys in the draft who the Knicks may have been taking a look at as well. So it just and they brought this up. Mills brought it up yesterday. Perry brought it up. Fizdale brought it up. It shows the competitiveness of Kevin Knox, and it does show that he really did want to be a member of the New York Knicks organization. Obviously, the lights are very bright at Rupp Arena and the University of Kentucky, and we all know the lights, especially if you're a first-round draft pick of this beloved New York franchise, the lights are very bright at Madison Square Garden. And that's where Kevin Knox wanted to be, and that's where Kevin Knox is. It's Pat O'Keefe in for Dave Rothenberg, 1-800-919-3776. Back to the phones, it's James in Queens. Hey, James.
What's up, Kev? Really quick, I like Mills. I like Perry. I like everything outside of Tim Hardaway Jr. I can't stand him. But I don't agree with this hyperbole about Phil Jackson was the absolute worst thing that ever happened. The Knicks have been bad for 100 years, and all of a sudden we're too good to let Phil Jackson work through whatever mistakes you think he made to do what he thinks is the best. This notion that he didn't have a plan, he turned over the roster, which was a dumb roster mentally with basketball, and put some smart guys in there. Everybody agreed with every single move he made when he made it, and the teams came out and they played better. And they had no leader, so the bottom fell out. And you seen that, you heard that from George Karl, you heard that from D'Antoni, who couldn't do what he wanted to do. Phil Jackson came and couldn't do what he wanted to do. And it's like, well, how we're blaming Phil Jackson? I'm not saying no GM is flawless. You're going to make some bad decisions, but how does he not get the benefit of the doubt? Because Popovich wouldn't have that problem here. I didn't get it. So that part I didn't get. But more so, I think the problem with the Knicks is the salary cap. Because if the money's all the same, Durant is going to join the Warriors. If the money's all the same, LeBron is going to go to Miami. We can't outspend our mistakes, so we keep tripping over our own feet. So if we were allowed to spend our money, we would always be better, not always be better than Cleveland, but Durant, you could get away from Golden State and spread out talent, because players, you could tell, why not sign them for 9 years, $400 million? What is the problem with that?
Well, here's the thing, James, let me jump in there. All right. Yes, the Knicks can't outspend their mistakes. There was a time in the early 2000s they tried to do that, and it dug them into a huge hole. But there is a salary cap, as you said, and with the limited amount of money they had to spend, Phil Jackson spent $72 million to bring in Joakim Noah.
Okay, everybody keeps bringing up Noah. No, it's not the reason why we're not good. We're not good because when we played the Warriors, Melo sat out. We're not good because he wanted to play in the All-Star game, then have surgery. We're not good because we're letting Cleveland bottle flip on the court. I've watched 82 games. Well, this is before Phil's most of this. And when players are not getting back on defense, when they're breaking a play, I'm not looking, thinking, Phil Jackson, oh, my God. What? Are you kidding? He doesn't play. He does not play. He put players there that should know their job. Whatever offense you want to execute will work if you execute it. I don't understand how we're snubbing our noses at an offense, which wasn't the problem. Defense was our problem. But that an offense that worked 6 times for the greatest players in the world. Phil made Melo uncomfortable the same way he made Kobe uncomfortable, the same way he made Shaq uncomfortable, but Melo did not respond right to it. That's just the type of guy he is. So we had no leadership on the court at all.
James, I hear you. I hear you, and I thank you for the call. All right, a couple things on that. Obviously, James puts more of the blame on Carmelo Anthony than Phil Jackson. That's fair. That's James's opinion. I agree with James. Phil Jackson was not the worst thing to ever happen to the Knicks. There were some good things that Phil Jackson did. First and foremost, he drafted Kristaps Porzingis. Now, you want to say he drafted him because the Lakers made a mistake picking D'Angelo Russell and the 76ers made a mistake by picking Jahlil Okafor. I don't care. Phil Jackson drafted Porzingis. I was in Barclays Center that night. I was at that draft. I was sitting there, and I thought the best thing for the Knicks to do from their perspective was to pick Emmanuel Mudiay. I thought they needed a point guard. Phil Jackson picked Kristaps Porzingis. I actually remember getting a text from a good friend of mine that night as the Knicks were on the clock. And it basically said, and this is a longtime Knicks fan, and it basically said, if they draft this kid from Latvia, I'm done being a Knicks fan. Okay, so Kristaps Porzingis, even though two teams passed on him that maybe shouldn't have, he wasn't the obvious choice there at number four. Phil Jackson deserves credit for that. The other thing that Phil Jackson deserves credit for, he stopped the cycle of trying to improve this team by trading draft picks for established high-priced veterans. Okay? And that is something that hopefully the Knicks can reap the benefits of if Mills and Perry, if Scott Perry is indeed the guy to use those picks wisely going forward. Whether or not that was done, this was his first crack at it. This was his first swing. Remember, Phil Jackson picked Frank Ntilikina and then was let go a week later. So it seems like Ntilikina is Perry and Mills' guy, but he's not. Okay? Perry and Mills' guy, or Perry's guy, is Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson and everybody else going forward. So those were the two things that Phil Jackson did well. There was a lot that he didn't do well. We talked about the Carmelo Anthony contract where Jackson seemed to be bidding against himself and gave Carmelo a $124 million contract when I think he could have gone for $125.
The first coach he hired, Derek Fisher, lasted a year and a half.
All right, here's the thing. I don't think Derek Fisher was the worst coach in the world.
But he lasted a year and a half.
Now, there were the obvious... Let's look. He had the issues off the court, okay? The Matt Barnes incident and that leaving training camp, those are kinds of things that are inexcusable. I think as you look back on this franchise over the last few years, I firmly believe that Derek Fisher, as the head coach for the Knicks, has as much to do with Kristaps Porzingis' NBA success as anybody. And I don't think he's given enough credit for that. Your thoughts?
Okay. I mean,
he started him day one. All we knew about Porzingis, he was this 19-year-old kid from Latvia. He didn't play big minutes in Spain, like a lot of teenagers don't in the EuroLeague. And he was extremely undersized in terms of having a frail body or frail frame. Fisher stuck him in the starting lineup. Opening night, I think he scored like 14 points, grabbed like 8 rebounds. And Fisher rode him out. And I think Fisher had a lot to do with Porzingis' development.
That's fair. But then overall, you look at his record. He won 17 games his first season.
Throw that out. Throw that season out. That season should be thrown out.
That's a part of his resume, though.
Sure, it's part of his resume.
It has to be.
But he went from 17 wins to 31 wins, or 32 wins, his second season.
But he didn't even make it through the whole second season. He was let go. So,
right.
I mean, that's Phil's
most of the 32 wins were he won before he was let go in February. Kurt Rambis won about 5 or 6 games after that.
So that has to be a knock on Phil. By the way, I just looked up the caller who chimed in about Phil Jackson. Montana caller area code
406.
Yeah,
I used to live in Montana.
It was
a
Montana area code.
Really? Is that right? Come on, you're kidding me.
No, I'm just joking.
I got so excited that I remember the area code from Montana. That's funny. All right, look, the phones are actually lighting up, so let's get to some calls here. It's Pat O'Keefe in for Dave Rothenberg, 1-800-919-3776. Let's chat with Eli in Newark. Eli, what's up?
Hey, Doug. Good morning, bro.
Good morning.
I just heard a guy previously saying why we're too hard on Phil Jackson. I respectfully but strongly disagree with him. Listen, Phil Jackson, well, I heard he was coming to the Knicks. I'm a Knicks fan. When he come to the Knicks, I jump on the bandwagon.
You should have.
Wait. Well, I found out he was going to be he's not going to call. Wait, but I jumped off the bandwagon fast. I jumped on. He didn't win none of those rings as a front office guy in Chicago or the Lakers or with the Knicks. He won as a coach. How are you going to be a front office guy? Demand that the coach for your style of offense to try and look like playing anymore. Then you go interfere with the guy's coaching and you're going to pull the guard to the side. You go, that's crazy. How are you going to do that? If you weren't going to coach, you should have never took the freaking job.
Well, that's why he's not here anymore. He wanted the best of both worlds, Eli. I agree with you. But I will also agree with our previous caller, the guy who Ty said was from Montana, who wasn't actually from Montana. I agree with the following statement is true, and I'll leave it at this. Phil Jackson was not the worst thing to ever happen to the Knicks franchise.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.